At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
And we are back. Crossover NBA podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. The last podcast before the holiday season kicks off in earnest. Thanksgiving just around the corner. And Howard, not to deviate too far here. Thanksgiving's probably my least favorite holiday.
Whoa.
I don't dig breaking news. Is there a breaking news sounder we can use for that? I don't dig Thanksgiving food. Like turkey does nothing for me. Cranberry sauce does nothing for me. Stuffing does nothing for me. Like pie, I can get down with pie, but everything else involved with Thanksgiving meals doesn't do anything for me. I will be probably on my couch ordering a pastrami sandwich on Thanksgiving and will be as happy as anyone on that holiday because of it. So do you have a hot take on Thanksgiving?
I mean, I just can't believe that you and I have been podcast partners for almost 2 years. We've known each other for, I don't know, 15 or something, and I'm just now discovering that you're a commie? Like, I didn't see that coming.
How's it might be a commie? Like, that food is...
Haiti Thanksgiving just is so un-American. That's as un-American as it gets.
Okay, but when was the last... Outside of Thanksgiving, you're a family man. Outside of Thanksgiving, when do you sit down and carve a turkey?
Well, turkeys like, are...
When does that meal exist?
Turkeys are very large, and cutting them is hard, and you need a lot of people around to eat a turkey because it's huge. I'm not carving anything else either. I'm not carving cows. I'm not carving chickens. I'm not doing a lot of carving, period. So that's... But I do love turkey. Like, turkey sandwich is kind of my go-to sandwich. I'm a turkey guy. I love stuffing. I love cranberry sauce. I still love the Ocean Spray straight out of the can, looks like the interior of a can, like cylinder of cranberry sauce. I freaking love that stuff. I love pumpkin pie. I'm all in on Thanksgiving, man. You can't talk me out of it.
So gross.
It's the best.
So gross.
It's the best.
No, it's not. I bet if you put up, maybe we'll do this on Tuesday, a Twitter poll. Who would you rather eat with on Thanksgiving? Howard Beck and his turkey and all the trimmings, or Chris Mannix and his... foot-long salami sandwich. Not salami, pastrami sandwich.
Right, sure. If you want to announce to the world that you are un-American and just don't understand the meaning of Thanksgiving, that's fine. Let's do the poll.
Yeah, let's do that. All right. On this episode, we're going to get into Ben Simmons. He returns to Philadelphia for the first time as a playing member of the Brooklyn Nets. The Golden State Warriors, they're struggling. What's the panic meter at for the Warriors? And Sacramento, my Kings, are the Sacramento Kings actually good? I told you, Howard Beck, before the season they were going to make the playoffs. They are starting to make me look good right now. But first, we want to begin with Kyrie Irving's return to the Nets lineup. Irving was back in the lineup on Sunday. It was a so-so performance after seven games off due to suspension. There was some stuff going on outside the arena that turned out to be just as newsy as what Kyrie was doing inside the arena. You were at the Barclays Center on Sunday, Howard, for this game. What did you make of Kyrie's return?
Well, let's talk basketball first. I mean, basketball-wise, you know, not exactly a memorable Kyrie performance, as his final game before the suspension also wasn't great that night against the Bulls, where he looked really tentative and just kind of out of sorts. And listen, again, as it's purely a basketball matter, you know, I think this is something to keep an eye on for the Nets, where, you know, I'm not gonna say this is like Kyrie is some passive victim in all this. He created this entire situation. But the situation and all the backlash, the criticism, everything that he has gone through, again, self-inflicted, but it is clearly having an impact on his psyche. And I think that showed up in the final game before his suspension. And then 3 weeks later, it showed up again in Sunday night's game where I think he had, 14 points on...
Yeah.
16 shots or something. Like it wasn't a great, or maybe on 12 shots, but it wasn't a great efficient performance. He had zero assists. He was there, right? Like Yuta Watanabe had a more memorable night by far than Kyrie. Watanabe, exploding for a bunch of threes in the fourth quarter when they put the game away. By the way, too, they win the game by pulling away in the fourth quarter, but it had been really close up until about 3-4 minutes into the fourth when they started to pull away. And this was against a Grizzlies team that had no Ja Morant, no Desmond Bane, no Jaren Jackson Jr. And the Nets, with all three of their stars out there, really struggled to put them away at home. So, the Nets have gotten, a little bit of momentum lately. And Kyrie Irving is now back. And Ben Simmons, we will talk about more. He is playing closer to what we're used to seeing the Ben Simmons of old. But I don't know where this goes next for Kyrie Irving, on the court or off the court. The controversy, you would presume, will eventually fade. But the feelings it stirred up, the backlash, the concerns, not just by many people outside of the organization, but the organization itself. Like, Kyrie, every single season he's been in Brooklyn, has put the organization through at least one major drama, controversy, strain. And all of that bears watching. I still don't think it's a given that Kyrie Irving finishes the season with the Nets. And that's just my gut. I'm not saying that's sourcing or anything else. I just think that, every day when you have this guy on your team, you're bracing yourself for what may be coming next. And I think the Nets are going to have to think about that over the next couple of months as we get toward the trade deadline.
Yeah, I thought Kyrie looked average in that game, looked tentative in that game. Some of it I expected. That was a long layoff. He's gone through a lot. I'm guessing he didn't play a lot of basketball during his time off, at least not the kind of basketball that would keep him in game shape. So I kind of saw what I expected to see on the court. I didn't expect to see the Israel United in Christ group outside, all decked out in the same wardrobe, demonstrating in support of Kyrie Irving. Israel United in Christ is a group that is identified as a hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Not good. Everything you read about this group is not good whatsoever. Kyrie was asked about this group being outside after the game, and I understand Kyrie getting asked the question about this group and his reaction to it. I also understand in that moment, Howard, Kyrie not really wanting to talk about it. Like, he had just finished a game, right? An NBA game. And I'm just guessing, but I'm going to guess that he didn't have a lot of time in the locker room to dive into who this group was and what the hell was going on outside. Like, that's just my guess at the moment. So I also didn't mind Kyrie kind of punting on any kind of answer on that question. He did a lot in, again, I agree with you what you said. All his wounds are self-inflicted. Like, this is all a mess of his own making. But he did an extended interview with our friend Ian Begley over at SNY. He did a media gag with reporters where he addressed all the questions that media people had about him over the last couple of days. Like, we kind of got into this last week, and this is where I predicted this Sunday game would be the game to watch, and it was. But like, I feel like Kyrie has done the necessary penance, so to speak, to kind of move forward with his career. Do you think I'm wrong there? I mean, I feel like this kind of stuff is going to come up during the season, whether it is a group like Israel United for Christ or other groups similar to him, to that, showing up and ostensibly showing support for Kyrie Irving. But I don't expect Kyrie to have to answer for these people. I don't expect him to have to, like, become like a spokesperson for these people or condemn them every single time someone like that showcases support for him. Because whether it's a demonstration, something on social media, a YouTube video, there's going to be stuff like this that come up where people that Kyrie does not necessarily want supporting him are going to come out publicly and show support.
So a couple different things. I was not at the arena as early as Kyrie was, but I'm told he was at the arena as early as like 4 o'clock he does all of his warming up long before everybody gets there. So it's altogether possible that Kyrie was there long before the Israel United in Christ group. They're a sect of the Black Israelites, the Black Hebrew Israelites. They may not have gathered there yet, and I don't think they had, in fact. So he was probably not aware that there was a demonstration going on, that they were marching, chanting, lining the entire sidewalk along Atlantic and Flatbush Avenues. It was quite a spectacle, to say the least. He probably was not aware of that directly. However, the Nets were aware of it. I know for a fact the team officials were aware of it, and so I'm sure they made him aware of it. So he had to know the questions were coming. So let me just say that. And then let me just say this. You're right, Chris. He is not responsible for anybody else's actions, anybody else's opinions, anybody else's thoughts. But I will say, this is my 26th year covering the NBA. As you know, I'm based in Brooklyn, and I've been covering a lot of home games of the Nets for the last 10 years that they've been in Brooklyn. I've covered the NBA in two different cities. I've covered for a variety of publications. I've covered a variety of teams. I've seen a lot of different stuff. You know what I've never seen, Chris, in all my years covering the NBA? I've never seen 300 members of an anti-Semitic extremist group, again, as you noted, designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center, designated by the Anti-Defamation League. This is a hate group. I have never seen anything like this outside of an NBA arena in all of my years covering the NBA. Why were they there? Now, they're there because they wanted to be there, but they were there because it was Kyrie Irving's first game back. And when he tweeted out that movie, that film that has caused all of this discussion, all this controversy over the last, 3-4 weeks ago, that sparked the support and the sympathy of people like the folks who were marching outside of Barclays on Sunday night. So no, it's not his doing that they're there, but it's not unrelated. And that is those of us who are still very concerned about this and believe that questions are still appropriate, it's because of the fact that, no, I'm not sitting around wondering whether Kyrie Irving is anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic, and he has said many times he is not. I take him at his word. He seems sincere to me. But the film that he tweeted out and that he put on his Instagram story, distributing it to 17 million followers of his, that's the impact it has, and that's what I don't think he's grasping. I wrote about this on SI.com today. That's what I don't think he's grasping, is that there are consequences. It doesn't matter what your beliefs are at this stage, or whether you have said and declared, I am for all people, I have love and understanding for everybody. Great, that's fine. But what you did in distributing, disseminating, publicizing this film that none of us had ever heard of, by the way. I know people want to say Amazon shouldn't have put it up. That's a different discussion. What any content provider, an internet platform, a library, a bookstore, whatever people put out there to have available for rent or purchase is a different kind of discussion than somebody, a public figure, with a worldwide following and 17 million social media followers putting it out there. That's a direct promotion. Amazon was not promoting this to my knowledge. And Kyrie Irving is the one who put this on everybody's radar. And among the consequences of that are that now you have Kanye West, who has been, just soaking himself in anti-Semitic rhetoric for the last several weeks. He's embracing Kyrie. You have all kinds of other hate groups and bad actors and people who do have, distinct, unmistakable anti-Jewish beliefs and agendas. They're all embracing him. And that includes this group that came out to support him Sunday night. They're not there if he doesn't do that. So, he's not responsible, but it's not unrelated. And I also just think, to put a period on this one, to whatever extent he may be aware of them or was aware of them, and I'm not sure how much he was. So benefit of the doubt, as you point out, in the moment post game, maybe he's not doesn't have enough information to make a comment. But if he has any idea what they're about, he should be distancing himself from them quickly. Mm-hmm. 24 hours have passed as you and I are recording this, maybe not quite 24 hours. he could put out a statement anytime he wants. He could go to Instagram or Twitter anytime he wants. He does it all the time when he has a message to get out there. If he wants to say that I have nothing to do with these people and I don't endorse their views, he could do that. He has not done that. And by the way, he also has not done that with the film. He has said, I don't agree with everything. Well, the film has a lot of really toxic stuff in it. He has not repudiated the film. He's not repudiated the book that it's based on, and he's not repudiated this group. I don't think we need to ask him about that every day. I don't have any ill feelings toward Kyrie, but it is frustrating to me that he can't see the need or the responsibility as a public figure to say, that's not me. I'm not down with that. That is what I would like to hear from him. He's not obligated to say it, of course. But I think he has a responsibility to make clear that it's not just about what he believes, but that these people who are speaking in his name do not represent him.
So you mentioned the possibility, and neither one of us, of course, is reporting this, that Kyrie might not finish the season with the Nets. Do you think that him exiting the team, either being sent home or outright released, will it have more to do with basketball, or do you think that everything that's happening around him will become just not, the juice won't be worth the squeeze, to borrow a movie line? Like, do you think it won't be worth it to have him around?
So that's the thing, right? There's various versions of this, and I'm trying to remember, I'm going to botch the phrasing, but it's basically like in the NBA, and this is probably applies to everywhere else too, right? Your problems can't be bigger than your talent, essentially, right? Like your value has to outweigh whatever other stuff. Dennis Rodman could get away with all the stuff that he pulled over years because he was a freaking basketball genius, right? And we make these exceptions for players if their contributions are enough that it's contributing to winning, or from a fan standpoint, if they're still embraced. Kyrie Irving has done a lot of different things to upset things within the Nets organization and with the fan base. And I think we are to the point now where you can say, look, what's coming next, right? I mean, is he going to get through the rest of the season without anything else flaring up? I'm not confident in that. I'm going to guess that Sean Marks and Joe Tsai aren't that confident in that. And on top of it, look, I'll go back to something I noted a couple weeks back, which is Kyrie Irving is a free agent in July. I think it's safe to say, even before this incident, that the Nets don't have much interest in bringing him back again. They have gone through all of these convulsions year after year with him. Why are you going to sign up for more of that? I don't see it. They didn't sign him to the extension that he wanted in the summer for a reason. So if he's got an expiration date, and I think he does, and it's July 1st at the latest, then why aren't you looking right now to try to say, look, what's our future beyond him? Unless you are so convinced, as the Nets, and maybe they are, unless you are so convinced that this season, if we just keep Kyrie, Ben Simmons, and Kevin Durant together with the supporting cast we have, if everything goes right, we could win a championship and then we'll figure it out later. Okay, that would be the reason to keep Kyrie Irving, and because he's Kevin Durant's friend. But if you believe, as I do, that the Nets have very little shot at winning the title. Granted, they've looked better lately. Ben Simmons reemerging is a huge piece of that. But if he's going to be gone anyway, and I think he will be, get out in front of this thing and start retooling for the future now. So, whether it's something else that Kyrie does, whether it's his play eroding, whether it's whatever, I just got to believe that sometime between now and February, there's going to be some serious consideration to whether he still makes sense in Brooklyn.
All right, let's talk about Ben Simmons for a couple of minutes here. Simmons and the Nets are in Philadelphia on Tuesday. Like you, I am expecting a warm reception from the Sixers fans for Ben Simmons. Applause, some positive signs, some affirmative language.
Did you see the look? Did you see? I have to interrupt. Did you see the look he gave our friend Brian Mahoney of the AP?
Yeah, Mahoney. Yeah.
when Brian asked, people go look this up online from the press conference. The look he gave Brian Mahoney of the Associated Press when Mahoney asked about what kind of reception he might expect was just amazing.
He knows what's coming. And As recently as a week ago, Howard, this felt like it was going to be a disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, Simmons was in and out of the lineup with some injury issues. He had not played all that well. The bad parts of his game were still there. The parts of his game that used to be really good, the passing, the playmaking, the defense, that had not emerged as of yet. But over these last three games, we have seen a somewhat rejuvenated version of Ben Simmons. In the last three games, Ben Simmons has averaged 16 points, 9 rebounds, and 5 assists. Against Memphis, he had 22 points. Playing the center position, matched up at times with Steven Adams, which is not a good matchup for Ben Simmons physically, as Adams might be the strongest player in the NBA. He played well in that position and kind of showed signs of being able to do the things that Brooklyn hoped he was going to be able to do when they acquired him 9 months ago. So as we go into this this big moment in Philadelphia for Ben Simmons, are you starting to believe that Simmons may be turning a corner here? What are you seeing out of Ben Simmons?
So two things that strike me about the way he's playing lately, Chris. The stats against Memphis were fantastic. Again, Memphis was shorthanded, but Ben Simmons going toe-to-toe with Steven Adams certainly like that. I thought that could be a rough night, and he actually, he absolutely won the matchup.
Looked like it early. It was going to be a rough night.
And having Ben Simmons, he started because they were missing Nick Claxton, and that's part of the key too here, which is that you can't really play Simmons and Claxton together because they're both non-shooters. And it was a rare time that you got to see Ben Simmons, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant playing extensive minutes together. I didn't actually do the math on how many minutes they actually logged as a threesome, but they started together with Joe Harris and Royce O'Neal. And the interesting part about that is this is what we've always talked about, right? And this is what people were talking about even when Ben Simmons was in Philly. It's always been a Joel Embiid-centric team. What happens if you just got Ben Simmons and shooters? Well, that's what you had finally Sunday night. You had Ben Simmons with Joe Harris, phenomenal three-point shooter, Kyrie Irving, great three-point shooter, Royce O'Neal, great three-point shooter, Kevin Durant, great shooter from everywhere on the planet. And it worked. Now, again, it worked against a shorthanded Grizzlies team that was missing Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr. But it's promising. And it's not promising for the stats. What's promising about the last few games for Ben Simmons is just look at him. He looks aggressive again. He looks confident again. He looks like he's actually enjoying the game again. And he hasn't been very revealing in terms of, like, is he physically feeling better because he had the back surgery? Is it because he's mentally more calm and
probably
relaxed?
Everything.
It's probably everything, right? Whatever it is, something has clicked over the last week. And my gosh, this looks so close to the Ben Simmons we saw a few years back when he was all NBA. And I really hope that he is able to sustain it because he's too young for his career to just take this bad of a decline. He entered this league as a really unique player, and he still has the opportunity to be a star in this league. And yes, better that he's going to Philly with that kind of confidence going on. And by the way, one last thought on this. At that press conference, it wasn't just the moment with Mahoney. He was light. Yeah. In general. And that has not always been the case, even during his time in Brooklyn. Like, he just seems like he's in a very good place, and I'm happy to see that.
You were sitting there watching it. To me, on TV, the body language just looked completely different. Like, he just looked confident out there on the floor. Like, the first 5 or 6 games of the season that he played in, there was a tentativeness that was obvious that you could see through the screen, or you could see it sitting courtside. He just did not look comfortable out there, whether it was because of how he was feeling physically, because of where he was at mentally, because of a myriad things, whatever it was. He didn't look like the same player. The last few games, he's starting to look a lot like the same player. Now, you mentioned Claxton. That's a problem for Brooklyn because you can play Ben Simmons at the five and thrive offensively, but defensively against bigger teams, you're going to get eaten alive. That's going to be a problem for them. So I don't know what you do in that situation. Like, in an ideal world, if you're Brooklyn, you go out and you get some kind of floor spacing five, someone that can defend the bigger guys on that end and offensively can be floor spacing and allow Ben Simmons to kind of roam the court and look for open shooters. Those guys obviously don't grow on trees, so I'm not sure how exactly they would go and do that. But that's going to be a problem for Jacques Vaughn, isn't it? Like, trying to figure out what the best mix is, because if you put Simmons and Claxton out there on the floor, it doesn't really matter if the other three guys are Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Joe Harris. You're still going to put yourself at a disadvantage because the floor spacing is going to shrink to the point where defenses, good defenses, are going to be able to key in on these guys and cause them problems. So I don't know about you, but I don't know what exactly Jacque Vaughn is going to do in that with that kind of mix.
Definitely an ongoing challenge, but this is, you know, this is the challenge that the Nets set themselves up for from the beginning here, where, you know, Ben Simmons is a difficult fit anyway because he's a non-shooter. Nick Claxton is the only real center they've got on the roster. They don't have enough size to defend on the interior. It's tricky, but you know, you mix and match. There are plenty of teams in this league that don't have necessarily like an all, you know, the perfect center who can defend at one end, stretch the defense at the other end, and bang with Steven Adams, right? Fortunately, in today's NBA, there are not a lot of big centers you got to bang with, but it's interesting. And I do think using Ben Simmons essentially as a playmaking center has been a master stroke. Like, it's not a shocking one. A lot of people said this was the most logical place to put him on this roster in particular. But I think now they just got to figure out a way to split the minutes between him and Claxton. They got plenty of shooting to put around those rosters or those lineups. They're onto something.
All right, let's move on to one of the stranger stories in the NBA that season. That is the struggles of the Golden State Warriors, the defending champs, who are off to a sub-500 start in this first month. James Wiseman, the highly touted former number two pick, he has been sent down to the G League. The defense has completely collapsed. Steve Kerr has been asked about benching Klay Thompson over the last couple of weeks, though Thompson, to his credit, did go for 41 points on Sunday, 60% shooting in that game, the win over the Rockets. Howard, I guess the question is, where should the panic meter be with Golden State? One being not at all panicked, 10 being 5 alarm fire, and they need to trade desperately over the next month to salvage the season.
I'm probably a little less panicky than a lot of folks on this. Probably certainly less panicky than Warriors fans. I think modest, somewhere in the modest range. Maybe like a 6 or a 7. I'm not in the 8 to 10 range on the panic meter. You never want to assume too much, right? You don't want to give a team too much credit for past results. But this is still the heart of not only a multi-time champion, but a defending champion that just won it all in June. And granted, they lost key players in the offseason. Otto Porter Jr., Nemanja Bjelica, Gary Payton. Like, those guys matter. And it's a really interesting lesson, once again, in NBA chemistry, where, you know, sometimes you just pull one little thread and things start to come unraveled and you think, well, these are the replaceable parts. As long as we have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, Andrew Wiggins, we'll be fine. Nah, benches matter. Like, any time we all get caught up in star power and like, oh, well, of course they can win all these games. They've got Steph Curry. You need the role guys. Just ask LeBron. You need good role players. Their starting five still looks great. If you could play 48 minutes with your starting five, if you could like turn off injuries, turn off health and all that stuff on the video game, they'd be fine. Mm-hmm. But you need a rotation. They made a bet that their young guys could step in place of the veterans that I mentioned. That was a bad bet. But the reason I'm not panicking yet is this, Chris. One, Steph Curry's playing like an MVP. Two, Klay's coming around. Three, the starters still look fine. And the question becomes, what do you do about the bench? Well, one possibility, maybe things start to click for Kuminga or Moody or both of them, or maybe even Wiseman once he kind of gets enough reps in the G League. I know people are so down on him. James Wiseman is still a virtual rookie. He has not played an 82-game schedule in the NBA yet. He has played 50-something games in the NBA. He is still basically a rookie. People are judging.
Didn't really play in college either. Out. He's had a very limited resume last 4 years.
So like, you know, give the kids some time. My gosh. But I don't know if the Warriors can be the ones to be patient. Like, I can say be patient with James Wiseman overall. This is a message to fans. The Warriors, however, may not be able to be patient because I think, you know, all right, look, we're in late November. You can afford to be, I think, a little bit patient still right now. They've won a couple games. They're starting to get their footing. see how things go over the next few weeks. I don't think you're making a panic trade right now, but if by mid-December you still don't trust your bench, then you have to start thinking about what you could get for Weissman, Kuminga, Moody, some combination thereof. Obviously, you're going to hold on to Jordan Poole with that big extension coming. And he's another guy who underachieved a little bit early on here, who I think will be, Jordan Poole's going to be fine. So there's six guys you can rely on, but you need eight or nine or 10. So I think the point may be coming soon, maybe, that you have to consider trading the young guys to get veteran help. But I don't think we're quite there yet. I think they've got a little time to see if they'll come around.
I don't think we're there yet either, but my panic meter at the moment is right around 7 with Golden State, because the numbers, they are what they are. They're pretty horrifying for Golden State, especially defensively. I mean, they're bottom third right now in the NBA in defense, or for having a top three defense a year ago. They're a team that gave up 105 points per game last year. They're giving up 117 in this season. They were sixth in the NBA in rebounding last season. They're now 25th as we record this. They do not defend the pick and roll in the same way they did a year ago. They are not defending in transition. They are giving up more second chance points than they did last season. And it's hard to look at those numbers and given the sample size, you know, 17, 18 games, and not be concerned by them and not wonder exactly what it's going to take to turn it around. Now, I'm with you that the starting five is great, and maybe that's close to all you need when you get to the postseason, a really great starting five or six when you throw Jordan Poole into that mix. But right now, they don't have that or those glue guys off the bench that they used to be able to rely on. I mean, for years, one of them was Andre Iguodala, who transitioned fantastically into a role player, not just in Golden State, but in Golden State among his post-Philadelphia stops. And he really was a glue guy on both ends of the floor for that team. Last year, you had Otto Porter, you had Gary Payton II. These were defensive-minded glue guys that could be relied on by the coaching staff. This year, you just don't have it yet. Now, Wiseman, I'm not giving up on Wiseman at all. The guy's a talent. I mean, I watched him play at Summer League. I know it's Summer League, but this guy has it in him to be an all-star level player. I really believe that. I just don't think it's going to happen this year. I don't think he's going to get to that point where you can count on him in postseason games. Maybe Kuminga and Moody come around, but the early returns, especially defensively, are not there for those guys. So I think if you're Bob Myers and you're that Warriors front office, you've got to have to make a decision sometime before February. Maybe not next month, maybe not even early January, but sometime before February. Is it worth mortgaging some or all of your future to extend this championship window? Because the way Joe Lacob framed it, you know, in the offseason, like, we've got these two tracks, it's great, you know, the championship team now, the young players who could help now and take over down the line, that does not seem to be playing out the way that Joe Lacob probably thought it was going to play out this season. So I think Bob Myers is going to have to make a call here. And look, he is going to be armed with the kind of assets that can get a big deal done. I mean, you and I were joking last week about the Lakers and all the players thereafter, Bradley Beal, among others. Lakers really don't have the pieces to get a blockbuster deal done, unless there's a team out there that really, really, really wants those two first-round picks at the end of a decade. The Warriors do. They've got draft picks. They've got three young lottery picks, including one former number two overall pick that they can dangle in a trade. They can get a big deal done. They can beat out probably everybody if that player becomes available, whether it's Beal or somebody else across the league. Do they do that, though? Like, I mean, I guess the question I have for you is, how tough a call do you think this is going to be for Golden State? If they are sitting there late December, early January, hovering around 500, the issues we're talking about right now, still there. Like, how tough a call do you think that's going to be for the Warriors front office?
Well, let me first note this real quick before I forget this particular aspect of this whole picture, which is, this is kind of a forgiving year in the Western Conference. There's no runaway favorite. Mm. And the Warriors, as you and I record this, they're 8-9. They're game under 500. There are 3.5 games out of first. They're only 2 games out of fifth. So, nothing can, you know, make...
The Jazz are at the top of the Western Conference right now.
I mean, so as long as everybody's
Kawhi's busted up. Not to interrupt, but Kawhi's busted up. The Suns don't scare anybody anymore. Like, I mean, you're right. Yeah. You're right. There's no boogeyman out there. But of course, if you want to play it forward a little bit, like, there are kind of boogeymen maybe in the Eastern Conference.
Sure.
Like, do you want to play full strength Milwaukee in the East? Boston looks great.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some teams that the Warriors would be heavy underdogs
for sure.
Right now going up
for
against
sure.
The series.
But when it comes, like, part of the reason I'm not panicking on their behalf is, if you're 8-9 but just 3.5 games out of first in late November, it means you've got time to figure it out because all of your rivals are still trying to figure something out too. And some of them, like Portland and Utah, may be overachieving a little bit. And the Nuggets are still kind of scuffling. And the Grizzlies have had injuries and they're scuffling. And the Timberwolves have not become the team that people thought they might be. And New Orleans has been up and down. Like, there's just nobody that you really have to fear. And so you've got time. It buys you time to be patient and to not do anything rash. I do think, to answer your question, this is difficult for them. This front office and this ownership led by Joe Lacob were really invested in the idea of the two timelines, or the dual track, as I called it, the story I wrote about this last December, that they were trying to pull off something that no one's ever really pulled off in the modern NBA, or to my knowledge ever. And to plan for the future, to have this bridge group, this young group that's going to lead you in the post-Steph Curry, Klay Thompson years, like, that's, it's ambitious. It's admirable. And in June, we thought, you know what? Damn, these guys are going to pull it off. They just won a championship despite having all these young guys on the roster that they think they can develop into their next core. But right now, it looks shaky, to say the least. I don't think they want to abandon it. I don't think Joe Lacob wants to abandon it. I talked to him during the finals back in June. And like, at that time, obviously, he was, you know, they're running, like, you know, not quite victory laps. It was before they won the title, but kind of close to victory laps about the idea that we've done this. We're going to win the championship and we've got the young core. But the young core has to develop. Like, they've got to figure it out. And Steve Kerr gave those guys all the opportunity in the world the first couple of weeks. It backfired. They weren't ready. And so here we are. I don't think it'll be easy for them to make the decision to change course. But I do think that, you know, this is a really smart organization, and they know you cannot mess around with Steph Curry, the tail end of his career. He's playing at MVP level. Don't screw this up by being too wedded to the young guys and the whole two timeline thing and have it cost you a chance at another title. They won't do that. They're not foolish. So if the moment comes where they've got a good deal they can make that they know will help them now, I think they'll do it.
Yeah, well, we're still a ways away from that, but the numbers aren't great right now. And I'm curious to see when we get to December, January, what the front office, what position they take if this team is still in that same rut they appear to be in right now. All right, what are we talking about Golden State for? Let's talk about the best team in the Bay Area right now. My Sacramento Kings, Howard. My Kings, who right now are 9-6 and in fifth place in the Western Conference, winners of six games in a row. They lost the first four. They have been white hot since then. The defense still sucks, but the offense right now is number two in the NBA. De'Aaron Fox, he was just named Western Conference Player of the Week. I was watching Kings Pistons on, what was it now, Sunday night. Don't ask me why, but Domantas Sabonis looked great. He has looked really good all season long. Kevin Huerter works. That was a tremendous deal that the front office in Sacramento pulled off. Are you a believer right now in Sacramento? Are you buying the Kings as a playoff team, as I told you they would be over a month ago?
I mean, I don't think I ever disagreed with that. I think I had said I could see the Kings making the playoffs.
Oh, check the tape. Check the tape. You did disagree. You called it, you maybe it was like some version of ambitious. You were a little wowed by my hot take there.
I think you may have, as is your habit, gone a little bit far with your Kings optimism. And I was being, as is my habit, a little cautious, but I was optimistic too. Like, I thought coming into this season, the Kings, they were ready for a breakthrough year. I still am not convinced that they made the right deal on the Haliburton Sabonis swap. That is a debate for another day, but the way Sabonis is fitting there, the way De'Aaron Fox is emerging. And of course that was the thing, like, you know, who's the future of your backcourt. And could they, you know, I thought they could have kept them together, frankly, but be that as it may, they made all these changes. They got more shooting. They brought in Kevin Huerter. They signed Malik Monk. their supporting cast looks really stout right now. They did a great job in selecting Keegan Murray, who's had some nice moments early on. They look really good. As you and I record this, they're the best team in California. They have the best record in California over the Warriors, over the Clippers, over the Lakers. The Sacramento Kings are the rulers of California in the NBA. Who would have thunk it? I'm happy to see it. I'm a Northern California guy. As you know, that's my roots. I went to school at UC Davis right down the road. I covered a lot of really memorable Lakers-Kings series back in the day when I was a Laker beat writer. Kings fans are fantastic. They deserve a respectable team. So I'm happy for a lot of folks out there. Maybe this will finally give me the opportunity to go actually see a game at Golden One Center, which opened like 5 years ago and I still have not been to a game at.
I was feeling trepidation after the Kings started 0-4 when they were getting beat up. And the defense looked like it was just as bad as it was last season. Still not good,
no.
But the offensive numbers are eye-popping at the moment. Just a few of them, Howard. They're first in points per game, fourth in field goals made, fifth in three-point field goals made, fourth in assists per game, eighth in points off turnovers, fourth in fast break points per game, 10th in fouls drawn, eighth in pace, fifth in passes made per game, and tied for 18th. That's not a really good number. I don't know why the game notes tell me that. Even secondary assists per game. But beyond that last one, there are a lot of really positive offensive numbers. I think Mike Brown is doing a really good job out there. Mike Brown's one of those guys where if he wasn't quite ready for the head coaching opportunities he got 10 years ago, whether it was Cleveland, LA, all that time spent on the Warriors bench, I think he did benefit from that. I think the Warriors miss him, quite frankly, because he was their de facto defensive coordinator with that team. For the Kings to make this sustainable, they don't have to be an elite defense. They got to get out of the bottom third. Like, if they can find their way to, like, 19th in defensive efficiency, they can be a playoff team because their offense is that good. They've got depth there. I think Keegan Murray is only going to get better. He's been dealing with some injury issues. I think he's only going to get better as this season goes on. He was my pick for Rookie of the Year. Probably not going to be because I think Paolo Banchero, if he stays healthy, is just nuts. But when I watch Herter play in that system, he just works. Fox, he works. I know that the Haliburton-Sabonis trade, will be reevaluating that in 3 years probably, but as Sacramento, the front office guys told me at the time, like, you got to give something to get something. I think they have something in Domantas Sabonis there. Like, he is just a really good physical big man. When I was watching him just mow down Marvin Bagley last night in that Pistons game, it just exemplified this guy is really, really good with the ball in his hands in the low post. Good rebounder, does a lot of things. If they can just get a little bit better defensively, they're going to be a playoff team this year. They don't have a lot of good defensive players. Like all the guys I mentioned, not known for defense. But if Mike Brown can coax like a top 19 rating out of this team, I believe Sacramento will wind up in that top six. Not just the top seven, the top six, and have a firmly entrenched playoff spot. I think they're that skilled and prolific offensively.
I mean, there's a path there. There's definitely a path there, but I'm one who believes that great defenses or even good to respectable defenses are built off of good defensive players. And so you can scheme all you want. If you don't have guys who can pull it off, it's not getting you anywhere. Just ask Tom Thibodeau, New York version or Minnesota version of Tom Thibodeau. Like he was a defensive genius until he had guys who couldn't play defense and then suddenly not so much. So, I'm sure Mike Brown is preaching it every day and is stressing that every day. But, can the Kings get there on scheming and hustle alone? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I tend to think that there are guys in this league who either play great defense or they don't. And sometimes it just takes one guy who makes everybody else better, right? If you've got a Rudy Gobert holding it down, suddenly everybody else looks like a better defender. So we'll see what they can do there. But in the meantime, outscoring everybody is working for the time being. De'Aaron Fox, I know people have had their doubts about him over the years. He's been a little up and down, and sometimes he's been a little too ball dominant. But, man, the guy looks legit right now. He's averaging 25.4 points, 4.8 rebounds, 6.4 assists. And he's doing it, by the way, his field goal attempts per game is at 17. That's his lowest in like 3 years. So it's not just that he's, forcing the issue. He's being pretty efficient. He's shooting a career high from three with 38.2% and a career high from two, 62.6. So he's definitely, he's off to a very efficient start, but in this league, you know, the stat guys will tell you 3-point shooting. Sometimes you can have a really, you can have what looks like a breakthrough season and you can still regress to the mean if you were never this good before. He's never been at the 38% level before from three. So is this a real breakthrough? Is it a sustainable stat for him, or is that something that might regress? I don't know, but he's shooting a career high. I think it might. No, I'll take that back. He's not shooting a career high from free throw, I don't think. But shooting 84.5 from free throw range, or free throws from the foul line too. He's just, everything is working for De'Aaron Fox. It's a crowded field, but you could say he's in the all-star mix right now at guard in the West, which is, as I say, a very, very crowded field, but he's at least under consideration.
I think the front office there has done a really, really, really good job with this group. Like I said, I like the Mike Brown hiring when it happened. I thought he was the right fit for that team. And then they go out and look, they make the Sabonis deal for Halliburton. We'll see how that looks in 3 years. But they made a trade for Kevin Huerter, who was available to a lot of teams at that time. Really only cost them a first round pick. And Herter's out there shooting like 50% from three right now and shooting like 7.5 threes per game. He's chucking them up there and making them at a high level. He has been excellent for that team. Malik Monk. Lakers let Malik Monk go. Let him walk. Malik Monk right now in Sacramento has been a terrific role player, averaging like 20 minutes per game, 12.5 points, shooting 37% from three. Like, what'd the Lakers let him go for? They could use a guy like that in their rotation. Like, these are the little things. And I like Keegan Murray too. I really think Keegan Murray is going to turn out to be a really strong player by the end of the season and beyond. These are the moves, Howard, that get you to that next level. You need stars, obviously. You need Fox to pan out. You need Sabonis to pan out. But if you flank them with quality role players, shooters, especially in today's NBA, which is what Sacramento has done, you're giving yourself a great chance to win. And the Kings have done that. Monty McNair, Wes Wilcox, they have done a really good job at fleshing out this roster with guys that fit. Just putting shooters around Fox, around Sabonis, and letting them operate. And I think this team is a playoff team this year. Last thing for you, before we get out the door, and this wasn't on the rundown, but I was just jumping up off the top of my head. Is Dwight Howard like the Stephon Marbury of Taiwan? Like, did you see his stat line in his opener in Taiwan? 38 points, 25 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 blocks. I was watching the highlight reel on Twitter, and he's jacking up threes. He's operating as a point guard at times for that team. Like, I don't know how much money Dwight Howard is making over there, but if you're Dwight Howard, you've accomplished a lot in the NBA. If you come back, if you get an offer, it's probably going to be a role player on a team. If you like Taiwan, stay there, man. Like, just stay there and live it up and just become a superstar in Taiwan in the same way Stephon Marbury became a superstar in China. Look, the crowd, Howard, was responding to him. Like, from what I saw in those videos, like, it was a good crowd at that arena, and they were responding to Dwight Howard. If you're having fun, go have fun, man. Put up big numbers in Taiwan and enjoy this last chapter of your career.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, look, he could do that. And as you know, their season ends, I think, February, March. He could still come back, get on a team's roster in time to be eligible for the playoffs. Like, we may still see him back in the NBA. But I tend to think a player of Dwight Howard's, with his resume, he's been around a long time. Everybody knows exactly who he is, what he's capable of doing. If he's still unsigned in October to the point, in November, whenever it was that he finally signed overseas, it means everybody's had a nice long look at you and they've just decided you don't fit their plans. So now things change. Injuries happen. Maybe there's room for him later in the season. It would be good to see him back. I would love to see him taking all those threes in an NBA game just for kicks. But it was fun to see. I saw that clip the other day as well, and that was a lot of fun.
I'm telling you, I want to watch every game that Dwight Howard plays over in Taiwan. I want to watch it. In the old days, we would have been able to just fly out there for SI and just go spend 2 weeks hanging around the guy and see what the hell is going on with Dwight out in Taiwan. But it's fun to watch him do that out there. I don't think he could do that stuff in an NBA game. I think a coach would bench him pretty quickly if he was letting threes fly, but whatever you want to do, Dwight in Taiwan, have at it. Howard, happy Thanksgiving, man. Enjoy your turkey. I'll enjoy my pastrami, and we'll reconvene next week.
Happy commie Thanksgiving, Chris. I'll see you next week.